en podcast fra NRK. Hør alle episodene kun I appen NRK Radio.
Hei og hjertelig velkommen til Trygdekontoret. Jeg heter Tom Hagen, altså ikke Tom Hagen som mistenkt for drap på kona sin, men Tom Hagen, han Robert Duvall-figuren som blir adoptert av Corleone-familien, og etter hvert blir deres advokat, Tom Hagen, det meg. Vi skal holde oss borte I Gudfarenland. Vi er faktisk på en måte I USA, for vi har fått besøk av en veldig, veldig, veldig kjent og veldig, veldig flink komiker som jeg har digget I mange, mange år. Han kjent som skuespiller. Han har også produsert mange nyskapende serier. Musiker har samarbeidet med folk som Kurt Weill. Mark DeMarco har et band som utelukkende synger om å drikke urin, som heter Yellow River Boys. Og nå han på turné med både stand-up og musikk med sitt very good band. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Who are, what's your name?
Tim Heidecker. Yes.
What an immense pleasure and honor to have you guesting Trygdekontoret.
I'm so relieved to hear you turn to English. I'm happy to be here.
Welcome to Norway.
We brought the sun.
You brought the sun, and you bring the noise.
Beautiful noise.
You're going to have a show tonight here in Oslo.
Yes.
And it's sold out. Shows.
It's sold out.
So, first of all, it's sold out.
And this is probably not going to air until after. Mm-hmm. So what are we doing here?
what's in it for me?
Yeah.
Going to move some units.
Yeah.
Did you, the show is, it's two parts.
Yes. So I do a lot of things, but this tour, I did it in the States last year. The first half is stand-up comedy. It's a character I do named Tim Heidecker, who is a terrible stand-up comedian. He's a inept, you know, misogynistic, hacky idiot.
Misogynist, that means a woman hater.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But not even, like, he's a guy without real convictions. He's just all front, you know, he's all just trying to... He's all attitude from a different era. So that's the first half. But it's a very surreal experience because the audience generally are not general audiences. They're coming with an awareness of the character, and it's they understand that it's a parody of something. It's a performance. So there's this weird, way too much laughter for the material I'm delivering, you know? But they're in it.
The discrepancy is a sort of a dark or weird vibe.
It's like pro wrestling.
Yeah.
Where you're pretending to hate somebody or you're pretending to love somebody. So that's the first half. So it's all very kind of meta and conceptual. Second half is I put out a bunch of records over the years, some funny, some not funny. And I put together this fantastic band that sounds like, you know, the band or that kind of music, kind of, you know, rock and roll.
Classic rock,
you know, country, little country vibes. We've got
rootsy.
A pedal steel, little rootsy, Stonesy a little bit.
Folksy.
There's some quiet songs, but this band rocks.
The first time I heard about you was about 15 years ago. I was actually living in the States, and I had some stoner friends who were working at Volcom, who make skate and surf clothing. They were my Latino metal dude friends
Gotcha.
Who lived in a trailer park right behind Volcom in uh-huh. Costa Mesa, California, and really big smokers.
I get it.
Smoke. Yeah. Heard that. Well, how's that bong sound? Like... Yeah. Like that would be the sound, and then they'd watch you guys all day.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm not a big smoker, but like,
right.
I mean, it will just like permeate your,
yeah.
your skin, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
They would watch you like in silence, you know, because you're
right.
You
we created a state of normalcy for them.
Yeah, that was like for them, this is like watching the news.
Yeah.
And it really blew my mind.
Yeah.
Might have been not just because of the THC level, but.
Right.
It's just a really cool cocktail of like VHS aesthetics mm-hmm. pictures and
yeah.
like all this sweat and like you would have people like co-starring like people you get from Craigslist like
yeah.
random there's like a lot of random people
playing
in
against
there.
Will Ferrell or somebody like
yeah,
that
yeah. And just this level of absurdity, which was very trippy and also very substantial. I think you know sounds very important, but
yeah.
Because it's very, some it's very edgy, very quirky, very, you know, you'd think it would be very non-accessible,
mm-hmm.
but it somehow became pretty popular.
I think so. Mm. Yeah, it felt that way for a little bit. It's sort of permeated into culture in America a little bit,
mm.
and like people reference it. And it's there's a whole style of commercial that seems to be like, you know, television commercials that are like, oh, those ad guys probably smoked pot and watched our show, you know.
Yeah.
So, and it's created a life for me to be sort of a professional artist.
And how old are you now?
47.
So this has been your living since.
Isn't that weird?
What a privilege.
Yeah, it is. Somebody asked me at one of these Q&As I do for the show, like, why do you keep doing what you do?
Hmm.
And it's like that line, the Van Morrison line, it's too late to stop now. Like, what else am I going to do?
Hmm.
This is it. This is, and I'm grateful, but. It is like I don't know anything else.
And you actually you're sort of in the sphere of movies still because you make or do you still make it? It's a movie review parody show called On Cinema at the Cinema.
Yes, it is. That on the surface that's what it is, but it's become a behemoth of a universe of a storytelling divide. Do you know? You know what? Yeah. It's basically two guys that review movies, don't know anything about movies in different ways. Like Greg is the film buff, the expert, but it's on such a weird, surface level where it's all about how long they are and what kind of connections he can make that are irrelevant. And my character, who's a total sort of Trumpian narcissist, psychopath really, who is really using this show as a vehicle to sell or push whatever scheme he's into these days. So it's this weird, it's become this very weird long-running soap opera, almost like it's like a novel at this point where it's really deep with layers and characters.
It's like War and Peace, but it's you two guys.
That's truly what it is. And the ultimate, the center of it is these two guys who hate each other, but there's no one else in their lives that would tolerate them. So they're kind of pushed into each other's lives like magnets. So, but it's now independently financed by viewers through this our website, the High Network, HEI, network.tv, that's after me. But it's fully funded by $5 a month from people that love the show. So it's a new world of figuring out how to make stuff
mm-hmm.
without the... Because there's a trend away from kind of weird stuff.
Mm.
Corporations doing weird stuff. They're playing it real safe these days, which isn't good for people like us.
Which brings us to the first topic from the Trygdebeist, the welfare beast, who's who's sort of an oracle in Delphi. Delphi being a suburb of to the southeast of Oslo called Follo.
Okay.
And he's live via satellite, but just voice only.
Okay.
Because he has some body image issues.
I understand that in many ways.
Oh, good day, Seltzer. Ja, du sitter og så flotter deg på engelsk nå, men vet du, jeg kan faen meg snakke ganske bra engelsk selv. Jeg heter utallige gjennomlytt av diverse Black Sabbath-plater, og har lest en del i Hustler-magasin også, blant annet. Så skal jeg si noe til han der, Heidecker. Hi, Tim Heidecker. I agree
Hei,
with you
Tim
saying Heidecker. That
jeg enig med deg at...
Faen, hva det der for noe?
Faen, hva det for noe?
Hun drittkjæringa der. Nei, få vekk hun.
Nei, få vekk hun.
It's about time. I think it's time
det
that you should...
Det på tide at du...
Faen! Hold kjeften på deg, jævla fitte.
Hold kjeften på deg, jævla fitte.
I just want to say, every time I try to tell a little edgy joke, then the PC police woke police come and cancel me. Oh, just say it as
bare
it is.
Bare si det som det er. Kall en spade for en spade.
Hold kjeften på deg, drittkjæring!
Hold kjeften på deg, drittkjæring!
There's a lot of talk of cancel culture these
days.
You've said that, in opposition to a lot of other comedians who say that this has become a major problem. You don't agree with that, do you? Or?
I don't see it as a major problem. I don't... The people that have... that may have made it their kind of persona or their personality to think of it as a problem seem to be doing okay.
Yeah, they're not getting canceled.
They're not getting canceled. Mm-hmm. So if we want to take some examples, Dave Chappelle is very successful. He's not going anywhere. There's going to be another Dave Chappelle comedy special that he will get paid very well for. I'm sure he'll do some kind of big tour. He's not canceled. Louis C.K. is doing great. He's done Madison Square Garden recently, I believe. Some of these people have had to change their approach to how they, what their business model is, I guess. Some big corporations might not want to be in business with certain people because of their reputations for various reasons. But that's just the market. I mean, that's just the free market. These people have to understand that these companies are, you know, represent their images is seen by all kinds of people, and they're going to be very fairly conservative about who they do business with. But there's so many ways to, if you have an audience, there's so many ways to express yourself to that audience through various forms of technology. So, you know, it's, and I think culture changes. It always changes. People's attitudes towards certain, to many issues change and evolve. Sometimes it goes backwards. But if you're not open to that, or if you're recalcitrant, is that a word?
I don't know.
If you're insistent on sticking with a certain way of looking at the world, then you should expect there to be backlash for that, I think. And I'm just always trying to remember that as I get older, that the world changes, and if you're not going to change with it, then you're going to be left behind. So now there are people that have been canceled for doing terrible things to mostly women. And I believe that there should be, you know, consequences for people's actions. So it's a really case by case thing. Of course, I'm sure there's examples of things, of times where it went too far, where something was taken out of context, or people were went too far in trying to, you know, ruin somebody. I'm sure there are cases that I don't have all these things memorized, but in general, it all kind of works itself out, I feel like. And yeah, so I'm not a cancel culture, you know, it doesn't worry me. It doesn't really change the way I think about doing what I do. That's
all. You don't put binds on yourself. You don't put, like, you don't.
Well, I do if it's me checking with my gut to say, how do I feel about this? Where does this line up with my own code of ethics that guides me as I do, you know? So, and that can correlate with the culture at large, you know? There's easy jokes that I could do or could try that might make a certain group of people laugh, but wouldn't feel right because it's not worth it. It's not worth it to, you know, degrade an already, you know, oppressed or sort of, you know,
marginalized,
a marginalized community already under siege. So yeah, it's all context, and I can kind of, because I work so much in satire and playing in characters, I can go into dark places and play with the line. But generally, my audience understands, and I hope people understand, that I'm doing these things to sort of make a point or to highlight you know, a certain type of person that's the opposite of who I think I am. You know, so I can play in dark water. And I love playing with death and playing with you know, cruelty and torture, and
but you're depending on that contract being there that they understand that.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody could come and just like stumble into your show off the street and say, not tonight because it's sold out.
Yeah.
But
no, and that.
And say, oh, look, listen to this woman hating fascist or whatever. And then they'll say, and then you can say, no, it's just a character. And they said, no, it's not. Or
exactly. That happens to me.
I think that's like some, you know, like how we will attribute. Intention
right
to some, like, why did you say that? What did you really mean that? Did you not? I mean, that's, to me, it seems like that stuff has gotten more complicated, maybe due to the just social media, whatever.
I think it's totally social media, and it's we're in an age of literalism, where people see something, and I can understand
one to one.
It's like I can understand people wanting to believe that what they're seeing is, in fact, what it is.
Mm.
As much as crazy as that is, because of course it's so easy to now put out things that aren't what they are. But yeah, and the impulse to immediately comment and put your point of view on that said thing. So in the case of On Cinema, a good example of that is we did a review of Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. Now my character is an absolute imbecile and is pretty much dyslexic when it comes to reading anything, you know, on a card. And that's been a long running joke. It's consistent with the character. And so when I get to the names of the actors in Black Panther, I mangle them as I would any name. Now, that got picked up and taken out of context by, you know, a Black influencer, Instagram account. And it went a little viral because everybody was taking that clip at face value that I was a real movie reviewer who was being disrespectful to African-American
names. Can you believe this shit?
Yeah. And right away, that guy should never be on television again. Who does he think he is? And in those comments were people trying to give context, saying, this is actually a comedy show. And even with that context, there were people who said, well, it's still not funny. Well, that's okay. You don't have to think it's funny.
Mm.
But it hasn't stopped me from doing it. But, you know, it made me think about how what you do can be perceived differently if it's outside of your little protected community of people that know what's going on.
But it seems like there might be some nostalgia there in the comedy community, if there is such. But, you know, like people say, Lenny Bruce, he could have never, you know, existed today because, I mean, he was very, you know, he went straight on into stereotypes and he was very, of course, a very progressive guy.
Sure.
But he would use the N-word. He would, you know, and like, he couldn't have done that today because of this culture of,
I don't know, because
intentional.
Maybe. I mean, I think he could have. I think people would be mad, could get mad at him, and he might receive a lot of negative comments. I don't know his body of work as well, maybe, than as you to know. But I think if he presented it the right way, and it was, I think the problem with, like, I mean, Dave Chappelle is like, it's not that he's making trans jokes. It's that he seems to have sort of an agenda of, you know, animus towards this group of people. For their you know, right to exist. So it's like that's really in context of understanding where he's coming from, you know. Whereas
but you can only just assume it, though. Kind of, I mean, or
with the case of Lenny Bruce.
No, and with Chappelle,
right?
Like, or is it just you deduce that he's? Because
Seems like over time, it's just this thing that he keeps bringing up.
He's fixated on it.
Yeah, it's like, maybe you should just go get, like, this stuff worked out, you know, like therapy or something. But I don't know. I keep bringing him up because it's like such a lightning rod of attention that delivers. But, he seems to be kind of taking an extreme position, hasn't been canceled, right? I mean, show me, in any way that in which he's been canceled. Maybe certain, I don't know. It seems like he can kind of do whatever he wants from my perspective.
So it's sort of like a comfortable selective victimhood thing, which is, you know, which a lot of people on the right would say about and every other group.
Yeah.
Would you say in general, that the sort of window and possibility of free, you know, of expression, freedom of expression, you know, at least in the United States, has, don't you think it has sort of diminished, shrunk?
Has it? First of all, there's so many ways to make stuff on your iPhone, put it up on, if it's YouTube, if YouTube takes it down, you can put it up somewhere else. Like,
there's multiple channels and outlets.
Yeah, there's no state regulation of speech, you know, very lax. Like, it's very
Florida
liberal.
Might soon.
Well, maybe, yeah. I mean, now we're in another area where the right is starting to try to do what they've always wanted to do, ban certain books and ban certain ways of expression. So yeah, if there's any cancel culture, it's coming from that side as usual. But I mean, I don't know. It feels like I think on the sort of corporate media side, there's a homogenization of content that's been happening for a long time, where there's a billion things you could watch, and there's probably about 12 versions of that spread out amongst thousands of shows. You know, there's 180 cop shows, there's 180 game shows. You know, there's not a lot of diversity in the kinds of media being made right now, which makes for like not a lot to watch that for me. But that's not really anybody suppressing speech. It's more, you know, conservative business decisions being made to avoid.
Well, risk taking has always been low for, I mean,
yeah,
you know,
and every once in a while,
TV in the '70s was probably, you know, sure, okay, we're going to lose our sponsors. We're going to lose.
And then every once in a while, some maverick comes around and gets a little freedom to mess things up. And then you create a new strain of the Sopranos, you know, like you create Adult Swim. That hasn't really happened in a little while. So I'm hoping it's happening soon.
Well, TikTok is the new.
Yeah, I can't get with TikTok.
I don't know. I've never seen it, but I see kids filming themselves.
Yes.
Doing dancing stuff. And I said, that's probably TikTok.
Yeah.
I don't want anything to do with that.
The problem with TikTok is very practical for me. It automatically starts playing when you open it up. It plays like a random video. So you open it up. If I opened it up right now, I'll show you. You can hear this experience. Make sure the sound is on. I think even with your sound off, it plays. So I open up TikTok, right?
So you do have TikTok.
Yeah, I do.
You sure about
right away, I'm in video land.
You sure about that?
Like, so sure? If I'm in bed.
That's a cool soundbite.
That's a Tim Robinson actually came up.
You sure about that?
Yeah.
That's a comedian friend of yours.
Yes.
Is he the guy who plays Tim from Allentown, who's like heckling you?
Yes, that's right.
That's really funny.
Yeah. So again, if I'm in bed and I'm like, oh, I guess my wife's trying to get to sleep, and if I want to just look at TikTok,
get punched in the face by your own algorithm.
Yeah, exactly.
Just because it's very.
So it makes me not want to go to that app.
Another person you've been taking issue with, is that the right? I think, bring it on. There's a lot of other persons you've taken. But Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
You had a little rant, or you've had a few rants against. I mean, that was during COVID. That was, he's the world's most successful podcaster.
Yeah, what a moniker.
What?
I know.
You're dissing podcasting.
Yes, I am. No, he's been very successful at it. I don't understand why. Mostly because I think
you're not into bow hunting.
It's so boring. Yeah, the every time I've tried to listen to that show, maybe it's just popular because people use it to go to sleep. You know, like you put it on and you nod off after a while.
Well, I've heard a lot of interesting people. I haven't listened to it for a while, but probably because
Ben Shapiro was
on and I
turned it off. Yeah. But yes, he there was a period where I was like, oh, cool, he's got like interesting alternative science
and people, it was the
intellectuals.
Of both sides.
Yeah,
it was both sidesism.
Tapped into like a really nice long form conversation with interesting people. Absolutely. But then, he kind of shifted and kind of played into one ideology and got boring and very self satisfied, very insular comedy world guys who like. Some of whom are total creeps at the comedy club who've known, you know, known sort of sexual predators of the comedy world. They're just hanging out, smoking cigars and drinking scotch. And it's just gross. It's like jock culture to me, you know, like
bar stool sports.
Yeah, like guys in the locker room talking about their craft. Gross, you know. And then you got just went
the receding
full,
like, hairline, and the girls just stay the same age.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But so, I mean, I think whatever the rant was, it was probably about vaccine stuff or something. Yeah. But I get all worked up on my show and start yelling about stuff. But then we did this parody of his show with these two genius comedians, Rajat Suresh and Jeremy Levick, I believe. That we just parodied the sound of the Joe Rogan show. It, almost like we could have done it with gibberish, you know, but we just did it with nonsense, because that's the way I feel when I'm listening to his show, is I lose track of what anyone's talking about, you know? And I don't know, has anyone ever made it to the end of a Joe Rogan podcast? That's what
they are notoriously long.
Long, yeah. But, yeah, so, you know, listen. The older I get, I'm sure you understand this, the more things bother me.
Mm.
And it's nice to be able to not just tell my wife about it, tell my audience about it.
Tell it from the mountain.
Yeah.
What bothering me, as I get older, I get more and more into, you know, playing with words.
Yeah.
And that turns into this term called dad jokes.
Oh, yes.
Which I feel is ageist, because you're saying that the dad, you know, this like old man stuff.
Yeah.
Like boomer, and then dad. And then I also feel like it's like, oh, that's the patriarchy. And so, no, as a dad, I'm like a patriarch in my little neighborhood.
So
it's like this whole, shaming. So dad jokes, I don't like the term.
I'm okay with it, because I love I love my identity being dad. Like,
yeah, me too.
I love being a dad. I am a dad.
You identify as a dad.
I identify as a dad.
Me too.
And I identify not only with my children, but with my audience a lot of the time. Because with office hours, younger guys, younger ladies calling in, and I have this kind of dad vibe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm the cool arty dad that you can talk
Mr. to. Mr. Google.
Yeah.
Just ask him anything.
Yeah. But, I mean, listen, I love puns and I love wordplay, and half of my act in the comedy act is bad puns. And I believe in bad puns. Like
Of the pun.
I think there's, if whatever is going to make you laugh, you know, like the president that has been to Norway more than anyone, Gerald Fjord.
It's pretty good.
So I don't care why you laughed. If it was smart or funny, you laughed.
Doesn't even have to be, I mean, with puns, the worse, the better.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like this inverse quality ranging. We're going to talk about music after a little while, but let's just stay on this track here about political climate here.
Sure.
Let's go back to the welfare beast. He's got something to say.
Faen selv, så jeg gidder faen ikke å prate engelsk. Hun drittkjæringa kommer ikke og avbryter og oversetter når du prater engelsk, da. Nei, det er typisk jævla NRK-rasisme. Altså, jeg bare lyst til å si til han Heidecker, jeg har sett den på YouTube, synes den ganske morsom, men så har jeg også mistet ganske mye respekt for den etter at den viser seg bare nok en sånn kulturpersonlighet som er imot Trump, har sånn Trump-disorder-syndrom. Sånn, altså, lag noe, bare si det på engelsk da, jeg skal si det. Hey Heidecker, make some pro-Trump jokes da.
Lag noen pro-Trump-vitser da.
Yeah, why not, you don't
Hvorfor
dare?
Ikke? Tør du ikke?
Hold kjeft, drittkjæring!
Hold kjeft, drittkjæring!
Can you do a pro-Trump joke?
Well, I can do an anti-Biden joke.
That's easy.
Is that
the easy, same thing? Yeah. Easy,
In England, I said, speaking of wordplay, I said, you know, in England, to buy a bag of chips, you'd use a shilling, which is not true, by the way. Long time ago, they gave that. You'd use a shilling. Meanwhile, in America, it's chilling what Biden's doing to our economy and to our culture with his failed presidency.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. It's stupid. And then when I was in Ireland, I did it, but I kept calling him O'Biden. So O'Biden's been just... Without even
he's Irish too.
Yeah.
So, do you felt? I mean, you're a vocal, let's say lefty. You're lefty.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you're a member of this party called the Democratic Socialists of America? And I have to ask you.
I mean, that's,
Wasn't the Communist Party known as the Democrats far enough left for you?
I did go down there and join, signed a card, which is what they're going to bring up when I testify before Congress, you know. But I didn't stick with it. I support them. I think what they do is generally great local activism. You know, they supporting the LA County teachers as they're striking, or like doing hunger, you know, or doing food drives and food banks and stuff. And they're, you know, they're a good grassroots community organization. Mm. But I didn't become like, you know, a member of the Politburo or whatever, that local chapter of their organization. But I try to support them if I can, when I can, you know.
So where do you see, I mentioned the Democratic Party. I think, you know, a lot of people, especially in Norway, will, or also in the States, but will think of that as the left party.
The Democratic Party?
Yeah.
Yeah, not really. I mean, yeah. They're just, now they're kind of the center. Hmm. They're kind of the inert, business as usual, reasonable, you know, capitalists who are fairly, you know, they're not extremists. They're generally, like, on social issues, they're fairly, to me, reasonable, you know, like gay marriage or, you know, lax drug laws or whatever it is, you know, women's rights. Like, they kind of, in my mind, play that in a reasonable way, where you look at the rest of the world and things are working pretty well in places like Norway. Mm. But, you know, they're not doing much to create a more equitable, you know, prosperous country for everybody. They're kind of keeping the levels of power and where they have been for a long time. So, they're sort of our best, but they have tremendous power, tremendous political power on every level. So it's hard to, and the only other party that has a tremendous amount of power are complete batshit lunatics who want to, you know, turn this country into a religious theocracy. Hmm. I guess that's kind of a saying the same, you could just say a theocracy, right?
Sounds pretty rad.
Yeah. So you don't have a lot of options. You're like, oh, I guess I'll go with these status quo, reasonable capitalists.
Well, like the feel-good capitalists?
Because
capitalists.
Yeah. nothing's great. It's a mess. It's all broken. That's why I like the local groups that kind of can do good work on a local level. It's very dangerous and scary to think about trying to break up that big party and then open up an avenue for the right to kind of have one party rule for eternity. Hmm. And get everything their sick minds want.
Have you, as a comedian and as a profiled sort of lefty or anti-Trump, have you ever gotten into any trouble with because of your
Yeah. Trouble, not much. I mean, trouble in terms of a barrage of hate my way from the internet, which is real. It's definitely real life, but it's not, it's also, you know, removed because there's no consequences. There's just people calling you names, essentially. But I did have people, like, you know, a lot of death threats and a lot of intimidation kind of methods on Twitter and Instagram.
You have a guy you do stuff with called, that sounded kind of dark.
Yeah.
This guy you do some stuff with called Vic Berger.
Vic Berger.
Who was, also runs a brilliant sort of a YouTube channel.
Yeah, he's on tour with me. He's my keyboard player in the
band.
Oh,
really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
He's a great
but
musician.
But he's a very, very masterful when it comes to making these surreal YouTube. Very, very, very high level. It's artistic qualities.
The art that makes you laugh until your pants are full of wet urine.
And it's like cut-up techniques of new stuff and sounds, and it's just really a really fascinating area. But he had the Proud Boys come, or a Proud Boy
Proud
come
Boys.
To his house.
Yeah, very sad Proud Boy showed up at his house. That I guess just yesterday or 2 days ago, Vic found that this guy had gotten flipped by the FBI and was now working for the FBI, this guy. So, that was not fun.
Happens to the best.
Yeah. I mean, it's just the Proud Boys as an idea is just the, I mean, most of this, like, I don't like to, I mean, I'm not a political junk. I mean, I'm not a political expert. I don't really know what the answers are all the time, but most of this all stems out of the absurdity and stupidity and humor in the Proud Boys or Trump or any of the other ghouls that Rudy Giuliani, you know, like these people, we're looking at it from a place of like, this is the most absurd, like you can't make some of this stuff up. Rudy Giuliani with the black hair dye dripping down the side of his
Gotham.
Face.
Gotham. It's like Batman villains.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like the Penguin. He's like, but it's you're gobsmacked that anyone takes any of these people seriously. And so when Vic gets, you know, there's just so much material out there that when we see it, we want to take it and play with it and comment on it. Not so much anymore because it feels like we've kind of gotten exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Trump getting indicted. We're like, okay, whatever. Like,
it ain't 2016 anymore.
Yeah, like let's hope he accidentally walks into a meat processing plant and gets caught up in the shredder. You know, that's where I'm hoping it goes. Not this slapping a federal campaign finance thing on him that he's gonna take as a victory when he wins and use it as a folk hero. Like, we're all just sick of him, you know, we're just sick of the whole thing. So
where do you see this going? Where do you see America going in the next few years?
I don't know. I think this centrist system is going to hold on to act to power on the electoral level for a little while longer. Because I think the right is still too fractured with Trump in it, with him being a contender with Ron. Like, I think they're still a mess, and that will hurt them enough to not get them to win. And the Democrats, you know, do cheat, and they do know how to. No, I'm just kidding.
Dead voters in Illinois.
Yeah, they will. Well, that's true. I mean,
it did happen.
The Kennedy-Nixon shit. But I think it'll hold. It's just, it's all shaky. It's all very built on sand kind of shit we're in right now. Systems are collapsing. There's feeling of like combination of climate change and our sort of inability to care for the welfare of most of the people that are on the edge and outskirts of
infrastructure too, just rotting away.
Infrastructure is falling apart. Mm. There's been no investment into like the core foundation of what makes great countries, you know? So it's very disheartening. I mean, just being over here in Europe and going through England, where everyone says it's falling apart, like where all of our systems are falling apart. It's terrible. I go, you haven't seen the worst. Yet the worst is yet to come. Like, your highways are working. Your rest stops are very nice. Like, your rest stops are better than our airports, you know, like food-wise and cleanliness-wise. Like, there seems to be like...
That's the Yellow River boy speaking.
Yeah,
there.
That's right. So I'm not very very optimistic, but who knows? I'm sure I'm wrong.
Would you say that, we both sort of have roots in what was known as the Steel Belt, which is now called the Rust Belt.
Yeah.
Allentown, Pennsylvania, which is named after a Billy Joel song.
I didn't know that. It was named after the Billy Joel song.
1982.
So Billy Joel wrote the song, and then they started the town.
They found it.
That I didn't know.
But he says they're living here in Allentown, they're closing all the factories down.
Yeah.
So you've seen sort of you've seen the Steel Belt turn into the Rust Belt.
It happened when I was a kid. It was like the 70s. Was when it all started falling apart, and I was around watching local news as the plant shrunk, and then eventually, big Bethlehem steel plant. That was the big steel plant that built, you know, the steel from the from the
biggest steel plants in the world.
Golden Gate Bridge is built from there, and all the World War II, you know,
the ship that destroyers. My grandfather commandeered in the U.S. Navy was built at Bethlehem Steel Plant, but in Massachusetts, at a shipyard. But steel also Mack trucks was
Mack trucks. Yeah, that was big.
So yeah.
So
was that sort of what the story is? That what created Trump?
Part of it, yeah. Mm. I guess so. I think, you know, the irony of that whole thing is, which I wrote a song about, is this guy, Wilbur Ross.
Hot Piss?
No, not Hot Piss. Song called Wilbur Ross. It's one of the angriest songs I've ever written. Mm. But Wilbur Ross was Trump's commerce secretary.
Yeah, that's...
And he looks like a turtle. You know this guy? He looks like an old dying turtle. And he is responsible for, you know, buying Bethlehem Steel and shutting it and, like, you know, driving it into bankruptcy.
Like a hostile takeover thing?
Yeah, one of these guys that would go in and buy stuff.
Bain
and
Capital?
Then just Bain Capital, letting it die. So it's really the people that were hurt most by the closings and the sort of destruction of the industrial state of the country are probably a lot of the same people who voted for Trump, which is, like, you know, suicidal in a lot of ways. So yeah, I mean, Allentown, where I grew up, was also a pretty prosperous suburb because there were a lot of colleges there. It was fairly close to New York, so you had people moving from that area, and there was Air Products, which is a big, like, chemical manufacturer, was there. So it wasn't like it wasn't around me that strongly, the idea of this dead steel town.
So like Gary, Indiana, or
no, it wasn't like that, but it did look like, you know, something out of Gotham City with this, you know, early 20th century steel structure that was just starting to go and fall apart. And now, here's another great irony. They turned that whole area into, it's called the Steel Stacks, and it's a casino. Like, what do you, I mean, how do you make
poetic,
that stuff up, you know?
Yeah.
So those people on welfare or whatever are probably going down there and putting coins in a slot machine where their grandfathers used to have.
Yeah, it's like,
not that working at a steel mill is all that
hall,
great either,
used to
you
be
know?
A town hall, now it's a brothel.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah.
And it's the same employees.
Exactly.
Tim Heidecker, you're also a big music, like you said, you're a songwriter.
Yeah.
A singer-songwriter. Do you have a hard time, sort of, because, I mean, you do the serious stuff, the Yellow River Boys.
Yeah.
I mean, the comedy stuff, and then you do some stuff that presumably you want to be taken on face value as a serious. Is that hard?
It's not hard for me. It might be hard for the audience. But I just say, you know, hey, this song's kind of sad. And then I'll say, all right, this is a song about piss. You know, so I don't know. I give my audience a lot of credit for being media literate enough or smart enough to, like, yeah, you should. It would be great if we all could, you know, if we're watching, like I was saying earlier, it's kind of this variety show where, you know, you have a sad song and then you have a clown come out, and those things can exist in the same night.
Absolutely.
So it doesn't happen a lot these days because for whatever reason, but I feel it's worked out really well on this summer tour and this Europe tour. There is this feeling of, I joked about this being like Old Testament, New Testament, but it does feel that way that by the end of the night, it all kind of works together in some weird way.
Mm.
And people are...
It's an emotional roller coaster.
It's an emotional roller coaster. Isn't that what we want out of our 2 hours of time?
As is life itself.
I'm asking you for. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is exact. The show is exactly like life.
It's miniature.
And I'm telling people after the fact on this show. So there's nothing you're going to be able to do about it.
I know. I think we're closing in on the end here.
I gotta get the sound check.
You had one yesterday. Anyway, I'm just there's. We actually have a question from a listener.
Oh, really?
We got mail from a guy named Brett. He's in New Zealand. He has a question. Dear Tim Heidecker, love your work. Will there be any more Decker? Your action thriller spy
no, I think,
action figure character.
I think, we're we're probably done with Decker. We did a lot. There's like a lot of Decker. Mm. And I'm a kill your babies kind of guy when it comes to, you know, characters that we feel like we've run into the ground. That character's fun to run into the ground. So
it was sort of pre-run.
Yeah,
to the ground.
Ready to run.
Ready to run. Mm-hmm.
But I think we might have exhausted that character for all he's we've used every piece of skin and bone and ligature.
Son of Decker.
Yeah. Well, I think we've done that.
They cloned him. Well, we're great. I'm a big Decker fan too, so I'm glad to hear that he's dead because
yeah, it's still there to be enjoyed. Watch it over and over again. Mm.
Just one. We're both pun fans.
Yeah.
I have this little game going. I saw you do this as your warm up routine or your crowd work, which is I call it like wordplay, turd play, or like Microsoft turd.
Yeah,
it's just. So this, it's like a little game. So I say something, we take turns.
Okay.
I'll say Willy Wonka, and then you say Willy Wanka.
Okay.
Like whatever pops in.
Whatever pops in. Let's
course,
do it.
Timing is the essence here, and then you throw one back at me.
Okay.
I'll say TNT.
CND.
I don't know what that is.
CBC. Canadian broadcast, which is what this reminds me of.
Yeah, it's like BBC, but for Canada. That's pretty good. Okay, your turn.
Sausage.
Massage. Or the...
No, I like that.
Okay, my turn. Coke Brothers.
Boat Brothers.
Pretty good. Okay, you'll, as a guest, you'll have the last one.
Okay.
Or we can do this for another hour, but you have to stop again.
Club Soda.
Club Athlete's Foot.
Oh, I was hoping you were going to say your last name.
Club Seltzer.
Yeah.
Hard Seltzer.
Yeah.
A little soft seltzer, huh?
That's right.
That's right. Tim Heidecker, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. It was lovely.
Good luck on how long are you going to be on your tour?
Four more shows, including tonight. And then I get to go home and see my children.
Oh, sweet home.
Is that written by Lemmy? No.
No, but actually, I think Tommy Lee actually wrote that.
That's a good one.
Tim? Break a leg.
Thank you.
And til dere som hører på, vi ses, høres neste uke. Stay trygg.
Du har hørt en podcast fra NRK. Hør alle episodene kun i appen NRK Radio.
På den lille øya Austbø går det en psykisk ustabil mann rundt med en kraftig rifle. Han har erklært krig mot politiet.
Når han kommer frem, så blir det, da blir det kamp. Da blir det han eller meg.
Han greier å overraske to politifolk i stormen på natta.
Så kommer det to skudd. De var ganske etter hverandre.
Familiemannen ender opp som dobbelt drapsmann.
Så har jeg jo en ganske fremmed følelse overfor at det er seg i dag som skal sitte som en drapsmann og være årsak til det, at jeg har tatt livet av to mennesker.
Politidrapene på Austbø hører du i appen NRK Radio.